This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, covering, of course, your Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also the co-host of the revived original Draft Breakdown podcast, which you can catch on all of the podcast platforms as well. He and Justin Higdon have brought that podcast back, as Justin was a guest on the show not too long ago as we were talking about the draft. And we are in episode 301. We took a week off last. We took a couple weeks off to let free agency happen. And so we are now all in about free agency, Seth. Just taking a look at what the Cardinals have done and what has happened in the NFL. Initial reactions, we'll get into more, but how have you felt that the Cardinals have done overall? Good haul, bad haul, interesting moves, like, have they gotten better?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any way you can look at it that they've gotten worse. From a, you know, who they lost, who they gained standpoint, I think we would agree the biggest loss is the pass rusher that they did not bring back, but I mean, from a game standpoint, I don't see how you can say anything but they've gotten better this offseason. You know, and of course, this is how you look at everything, but barring health.
Yeah, we've got some interesting moves we're going to talk about in this show. We're going to talk about the new addition. We're going to break it down like this. So we're going to start off by talking about the new additions to the team. Then we'll talk about the players they have re-signed, because they have re-signed a bunch of players. We're going to talk about the players who left, how will that affect them moving forward, and react as well to the needs they still have, because there are three positions where they have basically just ignored so far, and I'm sure they have a plan, because that's what you do. You have a plan. You don't just make it up as you go along. And then we'll talk a little bit about the stuff that's going around the division, around the league in general. So let's go ahead and get started with the Cardinals' new additions. We already know about J.J. Watt, so we've talked about J.J. Watt in a previous show, so he is technically already one of those additions, but he's an addition to the defensive line. They also went out and signed A.J. Green. They added Brian Winters, a veteran guard, Matt Prater, old kicker, not Phil Dawson old kicker, but pretty old, and outside of that, they've kind of stood pat, but they kind of targeted some things. They've got some other moves, but let's talk about some of these initial additions to the team. We know about J.J. Watt and his impact, but A.J. Green, how surprising was it for you that he was the receiver that they ended up getting, and what do you think of that addition?
You know, it's interesting to see the Cardinals go out and invest so heavily in a lot of aging players. This was an offseason where there were a number of prime players or players entering their prime. And you and I hypothesized, and I think for the most part we've been right, that a lot of guys would end up taking one-year prove-it deals. And that's happened quite a bit. So it was interesting that the Cardinals decided to go the route that they've gone. Now, that's not to say it won't work or it's a bad way to go about it, but it seems like it's lined up to be a lot of guys that can take pressure off of maybe younger players or new draftees that will be coming in. A.J. Green, for example, as you mentioned, you know, what happens if at pick 49, the Cardinals, a guy like Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU is there. Well, you don't need him to produce if you have AJ Green. So that's the way you kind of look at us at a pickup like AJ Green, is that Green is there because you know what to expect from him. He's not the near all pro that he was 3 or 4 years ago, but he can be a guy that can go get you 65 to 70 catches for, 750, 800 yards, and 5 or 6 touchdowns. And so that gives you time to bring in and develop a young guy. Green signing to me is just the most interesting aspect of it, is that he's going to be a fantastic litmus test for, was he just completely checked out in Cincinnati, or was he really, is he toast from an athletic standpoint? I don't think he is completely toast athletically, and this isn't me being a homer. I think that he was probably very disengaged with still being a Bengal 10 years later and going through another kind of rebuild with Joe Burrow. And not to say anything negative about Joe Burrow, just where he was. So I think the signing of him for $6 million, and then it can go up to $8 million. Am I right on those numbers?
Yes, it's $6 million up to $8.5 million. And I think he's got a cap hit this year of $3.5 million. So really reasonable.
And so that's the thing, is like, I don't think it was one of the 3 or 4 best options when you look at the contracts that came out of things. Whether it was Will Fuller, obviously Juju Smith-Schuster wasn't going anywhere else, because he went back to play in Pittsburgh. But Will Fuller, his contract wasn't bad. Corey Davis's wasn't as bad as I expected, and then T.Y. Hilton signed today for about $10 million per year, which is right around what we were expecting him to get. So those were all, guys that maybe, but the Cardinals are getting A.J. Green on a 1-year deal for, half or more than half of that. And let's be honest, they don't need, from a production standpoint, a wide receiver one. They need a guy that knows how to work and get open, and play the game. And I think that's what Green brings. And like I said, I think honestly, he gives them a really nice 1-year stopgap if they do decide to draft a player. Breshad Perriman, that was the other one I couldn't remember. And he only went for $3 million, which was... Where did he end up going?
I don't remember
the Lions, oh, I believe, Cobra. Right? Playing where his dad was. So, and so that's the thing. I mean, you look at it, Will Fuller, Breshad Perriman, I think they're better value, because just from a standpoint of, I think that they can probably give you a little more, and you probably could, maybe you could have gotten them on a 2-year deal, but maybe they were just truly looking for 1 year. And if you're looking at it at that, in that perspective, then I don't think you could have done much better than what you did with AJ Green.
What I love about this move and this is the fact that while you haven't seen the production in a couple years, the ceiling is really high. Let's be honest. Like, the ceiling could be, like, we've seen AJ Green is a top 5 receiver, top 3 receiver when he was at his best. So what I like about this is, well, 2 things. One is, you now have a legit Z outside receiver, and we don't have to try and convince everyone that Christian Kirk can do it. Christian Kirk could do it, but not at the highest level. Green can. He's going to be going against lesser corners now, which, and so that's going to be really, while you, you say, oh, we could have gotten Marvin Jones at this or another guy at this. If he gives you what Christian Kirk gave you last year at the, for that position, then you're kind of fine with that. But you get the ceiling of being really good and really productive. Like you could have him with 1,000 yards along with Hop getting 1,000 yards at a ceiling.
I think even more than that, though, is you look at, and I'm going to have to double check because I can't remember, but, you know, you look at Christian Kirk's numbers last year, 48 catches, 621 yards. And then you look at Larry Fitzgerald's numbers last year. It's a lot longer list, 52 catches, 409 yards. Now, I think from a catch standpoint, you're not going to expect him to get 98 catches. No. But if he's around 75% of their total combined last year, I think that's a huge thing, because I think you can expect Kirk to put up similar numbers. Maybe he breaks out finally and you get an 800 plus yard season. But I think Kirk is what he is at this point. He's a guy that gets you right around, you know, between 40 and 50 catches for 600 to 700 yards. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a great third wide receiver. That's a absolutely fantastic third wide receiver. You know, it's just, you were hoping or expecting a number two, potentially a number one, and you didn't get that. And that's the problem with expectations. Sometimes guys just don't meet them. But so if you get 75% of that combination, let's just call it 100 for, you know, easy math. So let's call it 70%. So you get 70 catches and you're getting, you know, him around 750 to 900 yards. That's fantastic. And now you're talking about, you know, 100, you know, 105, 110 catches for Hopkins for 1400 yards. You're talking about, you know, 70 for 800 and, you know, 50 for 700. That's a really good passing offense when you mix in whatever you get from the running backs and tight ends and, you know, the miscellaneous, you know, 30 other catches from receivers on the season.
Exactly. And so the green move is it could be a sneaky good move. I know a lot of people aren't in love with it in terms of age, but
I just think it's such a low risk.
Agreed. I think it's, you're not spending a lot. It's a low risk, high reward type thing, because you know physically, and I think he will be energized. As we know he had a contract dispute with Cincinnati, and you know he talked about that it wasn't necessarily the Burrow, it was the mishmash of quarterbacks after Burrow got hurt that was also the issue that really kind of, it was hard for him to go out and be the focal point of the offense and have quarterbacks who couldn't get him to the ball. What Keim cited on two different occasions in his press conference and on a podcast, he said like 112 or 118 targets this last year, 38 uncatchable balls through his. So you're talking 35% of the throws in his direction were uncatchable.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's the thing is, it's, even for Larry Fitzgerald, I think if he didn't have those 2 years of close, you know, being close or competing for a Super Bowl, you probably would have seen similar reaction to Fitz. And you know, I think I don't like saying this. I think we kind of saw that with Patrick Peterson. You know, a similar reaction to what Green had.
Yes.
Of, you know, wait, you're so I've done all this. I've been loyal. I've gone through the garbage that this franchise has been. And, you know, you don't want to. And I'm not saying Peterson is right. And I'm not saying Green was right. But I'm saying, like, sometimes it's just moving on. Right. Like sometimes it's just about getting into a different spot and giving yourself a little freedom. And I think that's what Green got coming here. I think it's going to be a nice fit. And somebody tweeted it. I can't remember who it was. But they basically said it's telling how many veterans are willing to put their final year championship prospects into Kyler Murray's hands.
Yeah, that is something. He's excited, and the fact
obviously Rodney Hudson aside, because he didn't have a choice, but you know, but I think that Green, Watt, and you know, Prater, that says something, because those are all guys that were wanted in other situations. Now maybe other places weren't going to give him $6 million, and that was, you know, part of it, and you know, that's always possible.
Yeah,
but like I said, I don't think the $6 million is unreasonable either.
It's not. It's not bad at all. Matt Prater, he's gonna be 37 years old this year. He's one of the, he has the NFL record for the longest field goal ever. He hit the 64-yarder for the Broncos. He has a connection with assistant head coach, special teams coordinator Jeff Rogers. He's worked with Aaron Brewer before. Obviously, you know, they talked about Zane Gonzalez like they liked him, but then they released him before free agency even began, which I thought was kind of puzzling, unless you were going to let him test the market, come back. But then, you know, it made it sound like when Keim was on the podcast with Jim Schroeder and Steve Wyche that Gonzalez wasn't ever part of the plan. They saw what they saw, and they wanted to improve that. You've got Prater, who... So if we recall the Phil Dawson signing a couple years ago, we thought it was kind of puzzling. He was, 41 at the time? And yeah, that's different. So Prater's going to be 37, and he still has the leg. And so that's the thing that you still like to see. You might be a little bit concerned about... Now, the Cardinals saw him up and close and personal because he hit the game-winning field goal against them for the Lions this last year to beat him. But, you know, everything about his... He still has the leg. He's great in the clutch. But you do look at 7 missed field goals last year, and you're like, is he better than Zane Gonzalez? Now, granted, he had 10 50 yards and longer attempts this last year. He was 6 for 10 from beyond 50. He was 4 for 7 from 40 to 49. So he was better than Zane. Zane was a mess from that 40 to 49, but he also had a lot of longer field goals. And last year's, the 75% field goal percentage was his lowest since 2008. But the previous three, and you do have to say that was a decline in each of the last 2 years, because he was at 87.5% in 2018, 83.9% in 2019, and 75% in 2020. So there is a decline. He missed 7 field goals last year, which, if I take a glance at it, would have been was not the most field goals he had missed in a career, but it was close to it. So there's a lot to like, because obviously we feel like Zane cost the Cardinals some games last year. Definitely cost them a game against New England. That should have been a win. It cost them a tie, at least a tie, against the Dolphins. And were it not for Isaiah Simmons, interception of Russell Wilson in overtime also cost them the chance. It cost them a win against the Seahawks as well. And so when he had... And, you know, he had 3 clutch kicks in the final minutes of a game to tie or win the game. He missed all 3. The overtime one he hit, but he missed those clutch kicks. And Prater has a history of being clutch. So, this looks like a good signing. It's not a cheap signing. But it's also one, the way it's structured, is that it's a 2-year deal, but really it's a 1-year deal, and you can bring it back next year if you want to, and if you don't, then it's not too much in terms of dead money.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing is that they needed a... We've talked about this before, but sometimes you just need a veteran that you trust in. You know, and like you said, this isn't Phil Dawson kind of over the hill past his prime. And that was the thing is, whether it's Chandler Catanzaro in 2016 or Zane Gonzalez last year.
This is literally the same cycle, though. You went with... They keep the Cardinals. They went to Jay Feely, who got old. They go to Chandler Catanzaro, who is young and promising. But in the second year, he falls apart. And so you bring in a really old guy. And then you replace him with Zane Gonzalez, who has a really good 2019. And then 2020 falls apart. And then you bring in another old guy.
Yeah, and so that's the thing is like, and that's, I mean, let's be honest, finding a kicker is tough. I mean, there's a reason that guys like Adam Vinatieri can play until they're, you know, 90 or whatever they are. And that's what makes it tough.
So you also look at the addition. So this was not a free agent acquisition. This was a trade. Rodney Hudson might be the... Now, if we're going to exclude J.J. Watt, who was at the beginning of the month before the league year even began, the acquisition of Rodney Hudson was a bit of a coup. We had heard, and there were rumblings that the Cardinals were in on Corey Linsley. But the L.A. Chargers came and blew them out of the water in terms of contact. And it didn't... So even if the Cardinals were in the ballpark with money... I don't think the Cardinals really had a chance once Chargers came in with money and with the fact that he had a former teammate in Brian Bulaga there who was in his ear. And so it's not for a lack of trying because from what we heard from people we knew that it came down to a difference of about $500,000, but then the Chargers offered him more than $12 million a year, which was like $2 million more than what we're hearing.
And they did it for two more years.
Right. And so they threw all the money at him, and he already has a friend there on the team. You've got a young quarterback like you have here. I think the Chargers were, like, all things equal, the Chargers were just, I mean, they just did a better job. But to pull off the Rodney Hudson trade is interesting because, well, they did acquire him via trade. It was believed that had he been released, which is kind of what Hudson wanted, that Arizona was going to be in the mix. But they wouldn't have been guaranteed to get him because Kansas City was throwing money around at offensive linemen as well. This was a great move. He's at a reasonable price. He's going to earn just under $10 million this year and just over $10 million next year. He's a Pro Bowl All-Pro type center who has gotten better as his career has gone on. And he's not old. He's in the final years of his prime. Center position you can play for a while, and he is definitely an improvement on Mason Cole, who, after everything that they said for 2 years about him, he's now very expendable. It went from, yeah, if we can, we'll always look to upgrade to, oh, we're looking at the top centers in the game who are going to be available. So clearly, Mason Cole was not in their plans.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that it was so well known that Corey Linsley was their top target to start with, and then they were able to maybe get an even better player at a, I guess, higher cost. I mean, it cost them a third-round pick. The salary is negligible, but yeah, I mean, I think... The reality is you've got a guy in Rodney Hudson who is a potential game-changing player at center and will potentially make it where the Cardinals' offensive line is really good. I mean...
Yeah, honestly, because like, you look at... You got... You're gonna now. You have at center and left tackle, Pro Bowl or near Pro Bowl production. You have Kelvin Beachum at right tackle, who was very good. you could have said he probably deserved a look at the Pro Bowl, but it never was really. He was very good. You have Justin Pugh, who was pretty good for most of the season, who played some really good ball. And so four out of the five spots you are very comfortable with. And then at right guard, now you have a bunch of guys that you're okay with. Like, you've got Justin Murray, who they've said basically they feel salt, like they're okay with him. Josh Jones, he's going to be in the mix. They'll see. There's upside. And then that brings us to the other addition with Brian Winters. He, you know, I feel is J.R. Sweezy from 2 years ago. But I don't want to take away from what we're talking about for Hudson. But it's just a massive upgrade over what they had in that offensive line. Now look, and so that's going to improve the offense. And this is also something they had to do. This is a message to Kyler Murray, telling them they are committed to him and helping him improve. So that it helps on a football level, it helps on a morale level. It was just a great move across the board.
And I mean, you mentioned the Watt signing and the impact it could have. And I don't want to take anything away from JJ Watt, because he's fantastic. Like, he's one of the, you know, five greatest defensive players of the last 30 years. However, at the level that they're each at right now, I think Rodney Hudson's probably the biggest signing or biggest move that they've made this offseason.
Agreed.
And like that's how good he potentially will be for them.
The one move of Brian Winters was a late addition. We'll see what the numbers come in and at. But it's interesting. I don't know how I don't know what the plan is, because it feels like the type of player he is, it's kind of like when they signed J.R. Sweezy 2 years ago. I know J.R. Sweezy is a bad word from this past season, but let's not forget that in 2019, he was a very reliable offensive lineman on that team. They're probably their most consistent lineman that season. And now you bring him in, he's basically been a starter for pretty much his entire career. He's very tough. He's a Sweezy type player in terms of mentality, and you feel comfortable with him starting, or you could go with Murray, or you could go with Josh Jones, or even you could go with Mason Cole, who I kind of get the feeling that he's going to be traded or cut. And you've even got Lamont Gilliard. So not only do you have very comfortable at four positions, you now have a glut of players that you feel you could play with at right guard, and competition breeds performance. And then you add a guy in there who's you should be able to count on. You've added veterans across the board, so you're not relying on young guys. That's kind of the theme, is that the Cardinals, as they built up youth, now want to rely on, they don't want to rely on their youth. They want to fill in with veterans who they know can get it done. And if the young guys rise to the top, well, so be it. That's better.
Yep. And you've got guys, you know, like you said, that you can trust. And if four of your positions are locked down and the one position you have a question mark is at right guard, and you have three really good choices, like you said, I feel like you are in a good spot.
Coming up next on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to talk about the players that they re-signed, because they were brought back a whole bunch of players. That's coming up next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Not only did the Cardinals bring in a few veteran players, they also made sure to shore up and to bring back a number of their own players. If we want to kind of go down the list of the players that they brought back on the offensive line, Kelvin Beachum on a 2-year deal to lock in right tackle. They brought back Max Garcia, a player we thought who would end up returning. Then you look at on the other side of the ball defensively, they re-signed Marcus Golden. They released and re-signed Robert Alford, a move that we thought was a smart move to do. They re-signed Tanner Vallejo. They tendered Zeke Turner and Dennis Gardeck. And then they re-signed punter Andy Lee. If we kind of start at the top, the Marcus Golden one was one of the first ones to have, one of the first kind of impact ones. Tanner Vallejo, I think, was a sneaky good move for the money, because the money that he has is he's locked in for a roster spot this year. And as we've talked about, so if the Cardinals use Isaiah Simmons in multiple roles like they did this last year, with the absence of Devondre Campbell, they need another linebacker who they are comfortable on the field with. And Vallejo can be that guy. He doesn't have to be there a lot, but it gives him a small role on the defense where anytime he's been asked to play defense, he's been productive. He was dynamic on special teams. He and Zeke Turner each led the team with 15 special teams tackles. And so I think it was an overall good move. But Marcus Golden, what shocked me the most about this move was the money, because he came back for almost nothing. When if you looked at some of these cap-site spot tracks, the market value for Golden was even higher than Hassan Reddick, which kind of baffled me a little bit. But he comes back, two-year deal, very reasonable in the terms that he came back on the cheap because he wanted to be here. And I think he understands that with J.J. Watt here, he's going to have a role and he's going to have a prominent-ish role, but I don't think he's going to play the number of snaps that he did the last year.
No, he's not. I mean, I think when you look at the guys that they re-signed, you can break it down into backups, like you said, the Max Garcias. You can break it down into special teams and contributors, Tanner Vallejo. And then you can look at the guys that are potential impact guys. And like you said, Kelvin Beachum is going to be their, barring injury, their starting right tackle. You look at Andy Lee, he's going to be their punter. Robert Alford right now, much to everybody's chagrin,
he's a starter right now.
He's their starting cornerback. So,
well, in fairness, they've got Robert Alford, Byron Murphy, Jace Whitaker, and Picasso Nelson. Do you know what a Picasso Nelson is? I don't. But yeah, they've got four cornerbacks on the roster.
I don't at all. But yeah, and so, I mean, when you look at it, it's just, it's a simple, they made simple, smart moves that are going to put them in a position, again, like we talked about, as much as people keep saying, what is going on at cornerback? I think what's going on at quarterback is they're going to allow it to play itself out. They're not going to force themselves to do anything. And I think we're seeing that kind of play out right now with how this is going down and what their moves are. Whether we agree or not is not the conversation. The fact is that they are putting themselves in a position where they feel like they have as many options as they possibly need to, kind of do whatever they want. And those re-signings echo that. They're not panicked. They're not doing too much to put themselves in a, in a bind or anything like that. So I think, the Marcus Golden, he's the perfect kind of complimentary backup outside linebacker. A guy that is going to be able to really come in, just press himself and rush the passer. That's, not something that he expected, but it's something that he's comfortable with doing and something that he can do well. So, you kind of just kind of play it in that way and look at it in that, frame of reference. And I think that in what the Cardinals are doing is that they're giving themselves as much of an opportunity as they possibly can to go in any direction that they really want to.
Yeah, it's, for me, the two most surprising things about the players who returned is not the who returned. It was the price. Golden came in much, you know, it was kind of ideal. It's actually a two-year, $5 million deal that's worth up to $9 million. He's got to hit some high sack numbers to hit his incentives. And then Kelvin Beecham. Here's the thing. I don't know what's happened to the market for Kelvin Beecham because he was a starting left tackle forever and ever. Then he doesn't get a contract last year until right before camp and signs for the league minimum. Then he plays his butt off, plays really well at right tackle for the first time in his career. And you figured that there was going to be a market for him, but he comes back for 2 years and $4 million. He came back on the cheap. I don't think we can put a value on this. The fact that these are players who wanted to come back, and Sean Coogler's worth to this team is really something, because Kelvin Beecham probably isn't on the team at all, period, if it's not for the relationship with Coogler. He said on his introductory press conference after the re-signing that it probably is the only coach for whom he would have moved from left tackle to right tackle. He did it gladly. He played at a high level. The Coogler being here was a big reason for him re-signing. It's really interesting to see just the way that players talk about Coach Coogler and just what he means to that coaching staff and to what they're doing on offense.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, you talk about his market and things like that. There's a lot of – we're seeing it more and more, and it's – you know, I don't want to take away from the consensus – or the fact that the Cardinals are so, you know, like you said, that Coogler has made them a team that they want to be, this is where players want to be. However, we're seeing a lot of times guys feel comfortable in situations. And when they feel comfortable in situations, they're willing to come back and maybe take a little less money. They're willing to give themselves or their team a little bit of a discount because they want to be somewhere. And we saw it not only with Beecham's contract coming back, we saw it with Justin Pugh just flat out saying, I wanted to be here. So they came to me about it, and I said yes.
Yeah, that's the other thing is, you know, for those of you who haven't paid attention, who haven't heard yet, Justin Pugh, who was a guy that we've all talked about as a potential trade candidate, cap casualty, because he was going to count more than $11 million against the cap, he restructured his deal, but it wasn't a normal restructure, which is paying him a bonus and kicking the can down the road. He gave up his roster bonus for this year. He was due $500,000 in a roster bonus. He was due. What was it? More than $7 million in salary. He just took a straight pay cut. So he pushed his roster bonus that he would have been paid $500,000 this week. He pushed it to next year, and he reduced his salary down to $4 million. Fully guaranteed, so that, you know, he will be on the roster. He will get $4 million this year. And basically, it guarantees he's going to be cut a year from now because they're going to have to pay him $1 million roster bonus to keep him on the roster next year unless he balls out. But that's not always something that players will do. Now, at that point in free agency, we don't know how long that's been going on. It could have been a case, hey, if you don't do this, we'll have to cut you. And then it's a matter of knowing, being self-aware of the type of market that he would have available. But just the fact that it looks good and now makes him look like a team player, it keeps, they've talked about, you know, he is a solid player. He's not a great player, but he's a solid player on that offensive line who's a leader And it just was, it was good for everyone involved because it gave the Cardinals a little bit more cap space. It, the fans now feel good because, you know, there was a funny meme that, that Blake made, because people think at more than $11 million cap hit, Pugh is trash. But you can't have him. At a $7 million cap hit, everyone's happy now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is, when you begin to create a... when you, what's the word I'm looking for? When you begin to create a structure or a, you know, a, where people want to be and where people want to play, which is what the Cardinals are doing right now, it just, I mean, it makes things so different because these type of things happen. Like in the past, players aren't going to take a pay cut to play for the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm not saying that the culture is turned under Cliff Kingsbury. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is players enjoy playing for him and want to play for he. They want to play for Sean Coogler. We've heard the same thing about Vance Joseph, have we not? Like, guys want to play for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Players want to go back. They know him. They like how he coaches. It's really interesting that the dynamic they have because as many times as we've heard former players kind of bristle at how it's probably Keim in the front office, how they were treated, there's a lot of people who want to come here for the quarterback, for the coaches.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, like I said, outside of Rodney Hudson, and I'm not saying that he doesn't want to be here or he won't want to be here, but outside of Rodney Hudson, all these guys came here because of the potential that this franchise has with Kyler Murray at the helm.
Absolutely. Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the players the Cardinals have lost or let leave in free agency. What impact will they have? What are their contracts surprising? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals have lost a number of players in free agency. Not that I don't know if any of the players who left were players they wanted, but let's kind of go down this list. Hassan Reddick, he gets a 1-year deal worth up to $8 million to go to the Carolina Panthers. It became kind of clear that the Cardinals weren't necessarily interested. Patrick Peterson leaves to the Minnesota Vikings. It's worth up to $10 million. Angelo Blackson gets a 2-year deal. Defensive lineman who was their only defensive lineman to play all 16 games last year gets a 2-year deal with the Chicago Bears. Kenyon Drake gets a 2-year deal with the Las Vegas Raiders. It's interesting, you know. $14.5 million over 2 years to be Josh Jacobs' backup. That's interesting. Trent Sherfield, they didn't tender him as a restricted free agent. He leaves to the San Francisco 49ers. He signs a 1-year minimum contract with them. I don't know. I haven't seen the numbers. Maybe there was a signing bonus, some signing bonus to go with that. But basically, he leaves to have the opportunity to do more than special teams, potentially played receiver. And then Dan Arnold, tight end Dan Arnold, gets a 2-year, $6 million deal with the Carolina Panthers as well. I guess of this list, for me, there were only really two surprises. One was Patrick Peterson, not because of everything that happened, but because the more I hear from comments from Steve Keim, guess what? The Cardinals just didn't want him back. They were ready to move on. This week, when Steve Keim equates it to when he had to cut Adrian Wilson, it became aware that this was not a monetary decision at all. This was not about Patrick's price tag, really. Because for the $8 million to $10 million that he's going to get with the Vikings, I mean, for a cornerback supposedly of his caliber, that's what you're going to get for him. You're going to have to pay for. The Cardinals didn't even try. They simply moved on. And then the other one, for me, the surprise was Dan Arnold. And it wasn't because that I thought the Cardinals were going to be more aggressive at getting him. It was like, how did Dan Arnold get $2 million in 2 years and $6 million with the Panthers? Those are my two surprises, honestly.
Yeah, and I think the Peterson thing, and this is just me speculating. I don't know, so don't take it, as gospel. But I think honestly, the Peterson thing was simply the fact that after the steroid thing, I think that kind of broke. And this sounds lame, don't get me wrong, but I think it broke the hearts of the Cardinals and their brass, right? Because one of the things about Aeneas Williams or Larry Fitzgerald or these kind of Hall of Fame guys that were Cardinals were that they did it the right way, right? Like, they're always the good guys. They were all, and that was supposed to be Pat P. And then he gets busted, and that kind of tainted everything. And then he throws his, fits online about not being respected, and snakes in the grass, and those type of things. And it's like, sometimes you just wonder if there comes a point, whether it's in sports or marriage or things like that, where it's time to divorce them, right? And like, I think that's kind of what this was, is that the Cardinals knew this portion of it was coming. They felt this coming. And so when, even if it was a little cheaper than was expected, the fact was they were just never going to go there again. And they were ready to move on and kind of start the healing process, so to speak.
Because leave on good terms, because Peterson has still close with Michael Bidwell. They've had talks, and it sounds like, sort of under the table, based on a comment that I wrote about it on Tuesday afternoon, based on a comment that he left on Instagram, is that he's going to be a Ring of Honor member. He's going to be back in number 21 in red sometime in the future. And so this is as good as it could have been in terms of leaving, and it allows him to sign with the team that he wants. It's if they were always just going to move on, it feels like, well, why didn't they trade him? But I get why they didn't trade him, because they were trying to compete, and he still was their best cornerback. But yeah, in terms of signing with the Vikings, I was surprised at the team, because I thought for sure he would end up in Kansas City, in Tampa, or New Orleans, or...
I honestly don't think, at the end of the day, he had that big of a market.
It's possible, that's true.
Well, or he did, and it was more that they were... Minnesota is willing to pay them more than anybody else would have. And so, I mean, that happens a lot. And we, whether or not we like it, we speculate that with J.J. Watt. Were the Cardinals willing to pay him the most money? And so he decided to come to Arizona over, everywhere else. That, and so maybe that was the same thing with Pat Pete, is that he just, at the end of the day, I mean, he was like, hey, $10 million's more than $4 million or $5 million. Like, and we, as fans, we love the idea that these guys just want to win. Like, that's all they care about. They just want to win rings. But you and I, having covered it long enough, and we know the reality is, a lot of times they just want to get paid. I mean, it's their job still.
And, right. I mean, they do want to win, but they don't want to win at the cost of,
sacrificing. Yeah.
Sacrificing money. Because let's be honest. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald, even among all this, he says all he wants to do is win a ring. That's all he's got left. But let's be honest. he's still making $11 million a year. So he can say that. He's made, what, $100 gazillion in his career?
He's literally the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. Like, it's not a maybe thing. He's literally
never really given up any money.
Right. And so, you know, you look at it in that structure, and that's just the reality of the situation. I mean, these guys want to get paid. And so at the end of the day, there's a lot of guys that are selling cars or selling insurance that have Super Bowl rings. Like, that's the easiest way I can explain it. And I know people cynically would say, well, you know, I would. Well, okay. If you would rather win a Super Bowl than have $150 million in the bank.
Well, and it's the thing. A lot of these athletes deep down feel like, hey, they're throwing $50 million at me for this team that has them in the playoffs. I can help them get there. I can do it. They believe, right. They believe they can win. They don't go there thinking, oh, we're going to be bad. They go there just like since the 90s. I get sucked into every offseason move and say, this is the year they're going to be better. And even if they're not, they're like, oh, well, it happened again. Guess what? These players do the same thing. They sign, and they believe that they're going to be part of it. If it's a bad team before, that they're going to be part of the team, part of the reason why they come out of it. They're going to be part of the reason why they get over the top. They're going to be part of the reason why they return to the playoffs. That's how these players feel. So that's their mentality. It's always been. Because if they had the fatalistic mentality, they wouldn't cut it in the league. So these are optimistic, these are forward-minded individuals in terms of, you know, I'm going to work better, I'm going to get my bags, and guess what? I'm going to help them get better because I'm going to be better, and I'm better than what they had before.
Exactly.
And other than that, Kenyon Drake's contract, I'm happy for him. I don't know what the Raiders are doing. Dan Arnold, how the Panthers think that he's worth the money that he's gotten when he hasn't done much in his career. They got sucked into that. And Hassan Reddick, I mean, that's basically what we thought he was going to have to settle for, based on the pass rushers that were out there available. And it was clear that the Cardinals had a choice. And honestly, like if we talked about in previous shows, Hassan Reddick at $6 to $8 million, his production was going to be diminished with the role he was going to have this year because he wasn't going to be an every down player. And this will end up being a better fit for him with a coach he knows. I'm super intrigued to see how he does as a 4-3 defensive end full time. It'll be interesting to see how he does. But other than that, nothing is overly surprising about the Cardinals who have departed.
Yeah, and that's the thing is nothing really hurt them from a loss standpoint. I think losing Reddick is going to be a big deal, is probably a strong word. I think it's going to be the thing that they have to figure out the most. But as you and I were talking about before the show, the reality is Patrick Peterson wasn't very good last year. And while he was their best cornerback, it wasn't that he was good.
He was just super inconsistent because there were times he was really good, but the bad was bad.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's the thing is, could you afford to pay him $10 million for that? You really couldn't. And so from that perspective, I think, you know, they did the right thing. And yeah, I'm with you on Drake and Arnold. Those are just interesting contracts.
But good for them. They get paid. I love, like, we are pro players getting paid because that's their job and they have a limited amount of time to do it. And if they're not getting paid, like if players aren't getting paid, then it's just executives, all rich people getting rich. So yeah, it's millionaires versus billionaires. And I'm for the millionaires. But team building's hard. But yes, good for Dan getting that money, getting an opportunity. Good for Drake. He really was a great addition to this team. And for what he came from, not being he wasn't a starter in college. He wasn't a starter for the first 4 years of his 3.5 years of his career to then turn that. And he's going to be a backup again, but he's going to be paid very well to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's the thing is, you know, I even tweeted out, I don't know exactly what Oakland or Las Vegas, sorry, Las Vegas is doing. Not sure by any means. But, I mean, they had the same record as the Cardinals last year. So, or, I mean.
That's true. That's
true. I'm not. It's not for me to judge.
Come to next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best car of cars talk on the web. Let's come back and talk about what's left. What do the Cardinals still need to do? What has been the most puzzling thing about what they've done so far? That's coming next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best car of Cardinals talk on the web. We've talked about the re-signings. We talked about the free agent additions. We talked about the departures. What the Cardinals still need to do, and I think everyone, all Cardinals fans are saying the same thing. Where are the cornerbacks? Because cornerback after cornerback keeps getting signed, and the Cardinals are doing nothing. The same thing could be said about running back, and the same thing could be said about tight end. Although tight end seems to be, just because of the nature of the position with the Cardinals, it's much lesser to worry about. But I am honestly intrigued and troubled. I don't know if trouble's the right word, but I would have thought that they would have addressed those positions. And I think they still will. I think they're just playing, as it is right now, they're playing a game of chicken with the players that are left. Because there are some decent cornerbacks still available. And it'll be interesting to see if they end up re-signing players that they had from last year or who they end up adding. But I know cornerback, running back, and tight end. But obviously for me, the priority is cornerback because, you know, right now they don't even – you've got Robert Alford and Byron Murphy. I don't consider Jace Whitaker an option right now, and I definitely don't consider Picasso Nelson an option. And I know, as we've seen over years of Steve Keim drafting, they don't go into the draft with glaring needs. They fill those needs, and then they still, like, just look last year. They signed a linebacker, and they drafted a linebacker. They signed a defensive tackle. They drafted two defensive tackles in 2018. They signed a quarterback, and then they drafted a quarterback, and they've done that at receiver. They've done it at linebacker. They've done it at pass rusher. They've done it on the offensive line before. They purposely keep themselves from being backed into a corner for the draft. And right now, it feels like that they're being backed into a corner to have to draft a cornerback. Now, there's some really good cornerbacks in this draft class, but we also know the Cardinals don't like to play rookie defensive players. So you're kind of left in that situation. Like, what are they going to do at cornerback? Who do you think they're going to end up having?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think when you look at what is left in free agency, you kind of hit it on the head. You've got not only Malcolm Butler, you've got a Gary and Connolly. These are, you know, talented players that, you know, fit the need of the team in terms of what, you know, veteran presence on the roster. I think with the 16th pick and the 49th pick in the draft, they're going to have a lot of options. I mean, we'll get to that in a little bit, you know, in the next couple of shows. And I think that there are some options that we maybe don't discuss enough. Part of one being, you know, guys like Jonathan Joseph coming back.
He's so old. Oh my goodness.
but he is, you're completely right, but he's old, but he's savvy, and he gives them, a veteran person. So if they do go draft a J.C. Horn at 16, who do you think is going to probably be starting? If they're healthy, you're probably going to see like a Robert Alford and a Jonathan Joseph, and Horn will be worked in. So I think the other thing is, and we've talked about this a little bit, especially after the Watt signing, and Richard Sherman was on a podcast. Can't remember whose podcast it was exactly, but he basically discussed the idea that pass rush is king to coverage. And so when you look at the reality of it, you've got a guy or you've got a team in the Arizona Cardinals who ideally will have a great pass rush, not a good pass rush, a great pass rush. And that, hopefully will give them, you know, as much help as they can possibly have on the back end.
And Sherman is a guy who could actually be one of the targets. There's some okay names still left out. You know, Malcolm Butler, you got Richard Sherman. There's a connection with AJ Bouye. Problem is, going to miss the first couple games with the suspension. Got Bashaud Breeland, Gary and Conley. Those are all names of guys who are capable, and probably at this point it's going to get less and less likely that they're going to get more, much more than the league minimum. And so there's option there. For me, the running back is also intriguing because it feels like they're going to go all in with Chase Edmonds. And I'm like, that's kind of gone. That's kind of been like against the way of thinking. And maybe they're just waiting, but running backs keep coming off the board. And while, yes, they could draft a running back in the first round or even the second round, there's some pretty good options there. I refuse to think that they're going to go into the draft not having addressed it at all and just saying, Chase Edmonds is the guy, when in the two games that he's had two full starts, one was great, one was and then he's gotten hurt. He's been nicked up after those games. That you're not going to bring in someone who is clearly going to be the backup, but still could be a number one option if Chase Edmonds either gets nicked up or just proves that it's better to share that load. And we've seen guys like Carlos Hyde, I thought would have been a good fit. Heck, pretty much everyone. Mike Davis,
yeah.
All those guys would have been great, and they're all off the board, and there's fewer and fewer running backs left. Damian Williams would have been a good option. Now you're left with like a Todd Gurley, Matt Breida, and I don't know if he's a great match. You know, you've got Jerick McKinnon. You've got, and we're at the point where I'm like, this is the sneaky match. Le'Veon Bell might be the guy. He was the third stringer for the Chiefs as last year, but he knows James Saxon. There's a connection there, James Conner. But if you're going to go with someone, or even a Wayne Gallman, though I don't know if he's a perfect fit, I'm just intrigued. It's like, are they just waiting and waiting and waiting until it's just on the cheap? Because you feel like, if they're still going to start their workout programs next month before the draft, that you're going to have someone when they start to have dialogues and meetings with coaches, that they can get in that playbook. And I'm going to think that they're going to want at least one other running back there to do that.
Yeah, you just look at the list of guys that are available, and like you said, Wayne Gallman, you've got a guy like Kalen Ballage, who's had some success in the league. Obviously, veterans like Le'Veon Bell, Alfred Morris, Frank Gore, Adrian Peterson, all those guys are available. A TJ Yeldon. But the one I'm interested in is, because I would have expected it to happen by now, is Leonard Fournette. Like, what's going on in Tampa? And I know that they're spending a ton of money already, because the salary cap isn't real. But you look at it, and they haven't come to an agreement yet with Fournette, and so that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting. Then tight end is the other one, is that they they have Max Williams, who never was healthy this last year, and a kid named Ian Bunting, who's never played it down in the NFL. The tight ends, I mean, are they just going to lean into the notion of three wide? Are they just going to bring Mike Darrell Daniels, who wasn't, you know, he's not, he's just a guy. But the tight ends that are left on the board, are like, who are you going to bring in that you can count on? Darrell Daniels does have some speed. He wasn't, like, they trusted him in the Max Williams role, but he wasn't nearly as good a blocker as Max Williams. It would just be nice to see something, to bring in another blocking tight end to be able to use that role, because Max Williams is not durable.
Right. And you know, Darren Fells is still available. He hasn't been bad. After that, I mean,
Luke Stalker.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nobody.
Ross Dwelly, he was the 49ers. No, wait, he re-signed, I think.
Yeah, he re-signed. You know, Tyler Eifert's old and has been hurt. You know, do you bring back a Seth DeValve?
I mean, he's a guy.
Yeah, and so that thing is, you know, maybe they'll just give, they'll just wait, you know, another to the draft or wait till later in the season to get some
interesting stuff.
Yeah, some, you know, an older guy to bring in.
Well, coming next on the Rest of Sea Red Podcast, the Rest of Power of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's just talk about the moves that have made around the league to wrap up the show before we close things up, and then we're going to be going all draft for the next several shows. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. In general, so there's been a lot of money spent. Lots of teams have gotten better. Somehow the Eagles and the Saints and the Rams got under the salary cap. Somehow the New England Patriots spent gobs and gobs of money. Drew Brees is retired. There's just, but what has been to you, what have been the things that have most stuck out to you in free agency thus far across the league? Maybe if you want to do kind of focus on the division and then the rest of the league.
You know, you look at the NFC West, and I think the 49ers are in an interesting spot because they re-sign Trent Williams. They're obviously looking to maintain their offensive output because they expect to get more from Jimmy Garoppolo this year or a different quarterback, and then, you know, get George Kittle back in the fold and things of that nature. They're a dangerous team. They've done a lot to bring back a lot of the same guys on offense and defense. Then you look at Seattle, and I don't know exactly what's going on. It's not that they haven't done anything or that they've been bad. It's just, I don't know exactly what their plan is outside of trying to mend the fences with Russ Wilson and not piss him off anymore.
I mean, they got Gabe Jackson. They brought back Ethan Posick. They added Gerald Everett. So, but it's like it feels like they brought back Chris Carson. Carlos Hyde is left. I think offensively, they're still okay. Their defense, well, that's another that's an interesting scenario there, is what they're doing defensively, because they cut ties with Carlos Dunlap, and that, you know,
they lost the Griffin kid, their top corner. They haven't really replaced him. That's the thing, is like, I'm not sure what's going on. It's almost odd, because it almost seems so much geared towards mending things with Russ over everything else. Which, I mean, let's be honest, that could make sense. And then the Rams are the sneaky guys that, you know, obviously they traded for Matt Stafford, but then they just brought in DeSean Jackson to be part of the receiving corps. They feel like the team that isn't, despite making the Stafford trade, they feel like the team that's not being talked about much in the division. And, you know, they were the best team in the, even though they didn't win the division last year, they were the team that went the furthest in the playoffs.
Yep. And, you know, they brought back Leonard Floyd. They've still got Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. Michael Brockers, they traded away. But they lose John Johnson from the secondary. So offensively, they're in a good spot. I think that's kind of the thing. As it was, I think all the questions about the Rams entering this year has always been about what's the defensive transition going to look like under Raheem Morris? And then you lose a Brockers, you lose a John Johnson, you lose one of your rotational guys in Ebukam. Or Bukem, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but what is that transition going to look like? And will the additions on offense or the addition of Stafford, will that be enough to lift the offense up to carry the defense while they find their footing?
Yeah, and I think all of those things are the big questions. And then you get to the NFC as a whole. And
what are the Bears doing?
Well, I mean, you've got that, but I think the biggest wave is obviously Drew Brees retiring. And then, yeah, what are the Bears doing?
They tweeted out on Tuesday, QB1, it's Andy Dalton. Why are you trying to hurt your fan base? Andy Dalton's like, stop.
And I mean, they released Kyle Fuller. They're looking at trading Akeem Hicks. Like, it's amazing the difference in terms of just managing the roster that you see in teams like Chicago versus, you know, these other teams. And let's, you know, we've always talked about sometimes the quarterback is what makes the biggest difference, right? They're the ones that make it easy. So yeah, Chicago's a baffling one. And then you've got basically everybody chasing Tampa and what they're somehow still putting together.
Right. And the 49ers, I was super intrigued by what the Patriots did early on because, you know, they bring back Cam Newton and then they pay all that money to two tight ends. And if you remember his time with the Panthers, he loved throwing the tight ends. And so you add Nelson Aguilar on the outside, but then you've got Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. I think the, you know, offensively, where they were so bad last year, that they're going to be sneaky all right this year. And Cam Newton, in the second year, shouldn't get COVID this time. With the weapons that he has now, that could be. I don't know. I don't think they're necessarily going to challenge the Bills, but they could challenge the Bills for that division again because repeating is hard to do. Repeating is always hard to do.
And you look at what the Patriots did. You know, you mentioned the tight ends and Jonnu Smith and Henry Hunter. I can never remember his name. But then they went and got Nelson Aguilar too. And so that's a lot of guys that work the underneath stuff, right? So, like, it's almost like they're giving Cam all these weapons to spread it out and go quick, but with big bodies and quick guys. It's an interesting way to do things. I like, you know, kind of where the Bills are going at the same time. And then I like what you're seeing out of a team like Miami, who's kind of taking their time in doing things in a certain way. And then it's interesting because when free agency started, everybody was really confident in how the Chiefs started out. Obviously they cut after they cut both their tackles, and everybody was expecting them to go out in free agency and address those positions. And they went and got Joe Thuney, who's the best guard on the market. I think we would agree with that. But then they struck out. They struck out on Corey Linsley. Obviously, we talked about the Rodney Hudson situation earlier. And then they struck out on Trent Williams. And that was supposed to be kind of their big move, right? Going to get Trent Williams. And they ended up just kind of running it back with Mike Rimmers, bringing back Daniel Sorensen. And so it's like, it's obviously early. So I don't mean this, you know, and Chiefs fans, don't kill me. But when you look at kind of what's going on, it seems a similar to what we've seen with Russell Wilson in Seattle, where it's not from a lack of trying, but it seems like they're just not getting or hitting the marks that they were trying to hit, you know, in terms of getting the guys that they were trying to get, which was surprising because you feel like a lot of these guys would want to come play with Patrick Mahomes and maybe win a ring.
Yeah. Yeah. All around the league, it's like, but here's the thing. We know that every team that looks the best in free agency, after, you know, when they win free agency, they don't necessarily win the title. With the exception of the Buccaneers a year ago when they,
yeah. And we all know, I mean, that's the thing is,
but they landed Tom Brady, who is the goat of goats. And so if you can do that, that's a different story.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. At the end of the day, that's all you look at is everybody's chasing. Every single team is chasing the Bucs, and that's what the question is: can you catch them? And nobody's ever been able to catch Tom Brady. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
And with that, let's wrap up this show, episode 301 with the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Over the next few weeks, we will be diving into the draft needs, draft prospects. And then, of course, as we head into the week of the draft, we will do our yearly mock draft of the first round. So with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Rise up! Team Red! Rise up! Team Red! Rise!